This is F1 Debrief. It's like watching F1 through a tilt-shift lens. Coming up this week, we discuss flying to Macau, who has the slowest pit stop, and secret radio buttons.
Every Formula One fan in the world must listen to Side Podcast with Mr. C and Christine. They're fabulous. Every Formula One fan in the world must listen to Side Podcast with Mr. C and Christine. They're fabulous. They know their stuff. They know their stuff.
It's like we're trying to hypnotise you or something.
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week for McLaren, who officially opened up their new production centre for making the road cars. Ron Dennis opened the centre and welcomed special guest David Cameron, Prime Minister, for the day. He said it gave the country something to be respected for and that it will help ride out these tough times. That's quite a lot of pressure.
All on Ron's shoulders. Get to it, Ron.
It's been a bad week for the Austin Grand Prix, as the future is up in the air and possibly in doubt. There's contract wrangling going on between the promoter, the track owner and Bernie. Construction work at the circuit stopped this week and I don't think it started up again yet.
It's yet more bad news for Formula One in America. When will US fans catch a break?
It was looking so good. Two races and now the bubble has burst. It's been a good week for Red Bull and Mercedes, who topped the fastest pit stop league with all teams calculated and averaged. Those two were top, with McLaren and then Force India behind them. Ferrari came fourth. At the other end, Lotus, Sauber and Toro Rosso came joint eighth, whilst HRT were unsurprisingly slowest and by quite a lot, more than a second slower in the pit stops than Virgin ahead of them.
Who has drawn these conclusions?
I read it on Autosport.
Right, the season isn't over yet. Things can change. How can you draw these conclusions? How many people are waiting for this Formula One season to be over already so they can get on and do their end of season summaries? They just can't wait one more race. They're going to burst if they can't tell somebody.
It's been a bad week for Williams, as they may have to pay money back to PDVSA as there's an investigation into the sponsorship deal. The team has been asked by Venezuelan Congressman Carlos Ramos to provide details of the deal because questions are being asked in Parliament.
Very, very bad week for Williams F1. That's the worst of all weeks possible.
News and views.
There was a young driver test this past week in Abu Dhabi following the race. You can't really draw any conclusions from it because they were all running different things. Some people were testing things for next year, some weren't. Different fuel runs, all that kind of stuff. Even Pirelli had special tyres that were being tested out as well. But it will come as no surprise to learn that Jean-Éric Vergne was on top for Red Bull for all 3 days.
Because the Red Bull is the fastest car and you cannot be slow in that car.
No,
unless your name's Mark Webber. Sorry, Mark.
There was a great comment from Fiox who said, "The awkward moment, your young driver comes within 1/10 of your second driver." Yeah.
Whoops.
Mr. Vergne reckons he's ready for a race seat, but I don't think there's any room for him, is there?
There's plenty of room. You just need to find a team who is willing to make way for him. Somebody, you know, like Lotus, maybe you might want to put Trulli aside. Who knows? There are places. Red Bull have money, and we've seen what they can do to get Ricciardo into a HRT. I'm sure they will find room for him somewhere on the grid. They have a potential space at Toro Rosso. You know, you've got Argiswari and Buemi both doing equally well, but neither outdriving or outperforming that car. So maybe both could go. Maybe he could fit in there somewhere.
The only other thing I particularly liked from testing was that Valtteri Bottas was testing for Williams, and he jumped out of the car. I think it was on the middle day. He jumped out of the car, hopped on an airplane, and he had to rush over to the Macau practice.
He's a busy man.
Yeah, one thing after another.
Did you not like the sight of ye olde exhausts returning to Formula One, just like the days when you started watching?
Yeah, I so noticed that.
Did you not appreciate the up-facing for next year? The rules have changed. Off-throttle diffusers are banned and you've got exhaust pointing up in the air, just like they used to do, no?
I know that Williams and Mercedes in particular were testing out things for 2012.
Did you see the massive barn door on the Ferrari?
There was a weird thing.
We have to put a link to that picture in the show notes, because if you haven't seen the Ferrari going around with an entire... how would you describe that?
It looked like a giant radiator or a big blind or something.
It was, yeah, very much like a blind, but it was maybe 5 foot by 5 foot on the edge of a Formula One car. It was only on one side. It was a lopsided Formula One car. It was very, very... You could see what they were doing. It's an extension of what teams have done in the past with the pitot tubes to measure airflow over and around the tyres. It just, Ferrari have done it in a more excessive way than anybody before them.
Also this week, Mr. Vitaly Petrov, he hit out at his team.
Yay!
Spoke out, said what he was really feeling.
We like drivers who can keep their feelings to themselves, don't we?
Well, I did like it, and then he totally backtracked and said, no, I'm really sorry, I was just tired.
Oh, that national television interview. You heard it, didn't you? Oh dear. What did he say?
Some of the things he said. At the beginning of the year, for the first 5 or 6 races, we looked really strong. We could not fight with Ferrari, Red Bull or McLaren, but we were quite close to Ferrari and much faster than Mercedes. It was very easy for us to pass from Q2 to Q3 using one set of tyres. But when the wind tunnel developments came, the new parts, because of the front exhausts, they didn't work. We worked on the front wing, the rear wing, the diffusers, the floor, but whatever we changed, it was useless. For about 10 races, we didn't have anything. So in fact, we have had the same car with which we started the season.
Yes. That is stating facts. I'm not sure why Vitaly is angry at that. They took a gamble on the exhaust. The gamble didn't pay off. But you can't redesign a Formula One car midway through the season. It takes too long to build a second iteration of it. You couldn't have reconfigured that Renault once, 5 races into the season. You can't then go, actually, can we have some rear-facing exhaust now, please? Because the concept of the car, the front wing and the balance and the setup of the car was all based around the concept of the front-facing exhaust. And even when they conspired to set fire to their drivers, they still had to stick with it. There's no changing once you're committed to that.
Yeah, and they didn't try to set fire to Petrov, so he's got nothing to be angry about. But he did go on to apologise. He said, I'm not trying to seek excuses, but I was still high on adrenaline from the race. I was exhausted, and just like you, this was in a letter to the team, I was very disappointed not to have made it into the top 10. I realise that the season is as tough for you all as it is for me, and I should not have said what I said. Once again, I'd like to apologise sincerely and promise you that this will not happen again. Presumably because he won't be driving for them.
It was unusual timing for an outburst, because the Renault contracts for next year aren't confirmed. There's a lot of speculation about ownership and where Petrov may end up. So, he may be in the Renault next year and he may have to live with that outburst for the rest of the next season. But then again, he may be somewhere else.
Well, Eric Boullier did say it was all fine. It's water under the bridge, not a problem. And I kind of think he should have said that, because about 5 minutes later, their technical director, James Allison, said their forward-facing exhausts were a bold but ultimately failed experiment.
So
I don't think anyone in that team is very happy.
Other Formula One teams had looked into forward-facing exhausts and rejected them. You have to wonder what Renault found that they liked so much that they wanted to run that risk. They must have had some information that, or maybe they were missing information that other teams had. They took the gamble. It didn't work out. It's worth mentioning, though, that of all the teams who can handle a driver who's ready to make an outburst or two is Renault. They had more than enough experience of handling Fernando Alonso and his many outbursts in the time that he was with the team. The downside is Petrov doesn't have the pace that Alonso had to back that up.
The race.
Do we have to? Must we discuss the Formula One Grand Prix at Yas Marina?
Well, yes, we do have to discuss what we found interesting about the race, and that is not a lot.
I'm going to struggle with this one. I don't want to be all depressive and negative towards Yas Marina. I'm sure it's a great racing circuit for some cars. It's just not a great racing circuit for Formula One cars. It can just about get away with holding a race when it's the final race of the season and it's a four-way championship showdown. When the Formula One season is done and dusted and there's nothing to play for, the very last place on earth you'd want to hold a Formula One race is in Abu Dhabi, because the track is dreadful.
Well, you say it can get away with hosting a championship finale, but it did that, and people lost their jobs because overtaking wasn't possible.
Right.
So, yes. No, it's not. I mean, there's talk that, this was the best race we've had at Abu Dhabi, but then when you think of some of the races we have had this season, it just wasn't good enough.
No,
really.
Compared to the start of the season, the excitement has vanished.
So we're going to sort of skip straight to rate the race, really, because actually there is one thing I wanted to say. Obviously, Vettel was on pole position and he got 2 corners into the race. Then his tyre exploded. He was at the back of the field. He went into the pits and he retired, which was, interesting enough. We haven't seen a Red Bull retire for a long time. We certainly haven't
seen
Vettel retire for a long time. But they made quite a lot of fuss about it. First, we had to follow Vettel with the cameras, followed him all the way back to the pit lane. They kept looking at him because he wasn't going to talk to the media. He sat on the pit wall forever. So we had to keep looking at him to make sure he was okay, keep seeing him getting hugged by his friends and family and mechanics. Well, I don't care.
Yeah, there was the problem was there was nothing going on track, and he watching Vettel wonder what happened to himself was more interesting than watching the cars go around.
But then Pirelli have to look into tyre failures, and this one was a bit weird because he didn't seem to do anything. Perhaps he hit the curb a bit hard, but there didn't seem to be any specific reason for the tyre failure. So it's understandable that Pirelli would want to have a look, and it seems like they can't actually find a definitive reason. And the Autosport news article for this, that it was the gist of it was basically, we're never going to know what caused this puncture. Panic! We will never find out what happened to Vettel. Woe is us.
Yes. Can I be a cynic?
It was all over the top. I don't really understand.
My suspicion is that Pirelli know exactly what the problem is and Red Bull know exactly what the problem is. And I wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't related to the way they're handling their tyre pressures. Earlier this season, Pirelli said, you must run your tyres at this pressure, as we tell you, because failures will occur. Was it in Spa when they were having problems?
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was a written rule. I don't know if anybody in the FIA is checking these things. It's very possible that Red Bull were doing something naughty with or without the knowledge of Pirelli, and nobody is willing to go on record and say anything. So now all they're saying is, we don't know. And I don't believe, with all the technology that Formula One has, that you just don't know. I don't believe it's impossible. You know, you've got all the tyre data, you've got the sensors, you've got onboard cameras from several cars, you can watch and rewatch the footage, you can replay all, everything that happened. Gigabytes of data are sent to computers every single lap. There is no way in the world that they can't possibly know nothing at all and be so clueless. So I can see why Autosport are making quite a bit of fuss about it, because they're keen to know the real reason and nobody is keen to say.
We had a message from George, who said, hi, this is just a thought about the Abu Dhabi GP this weekend. As Vettel went out on the second corner of the first lap, I couldn't help but think, if it would have been just the tyre that was damaged and he got new tyres in the pits, what position would he have ended up coming through the back, as we have only really seen him start from the front this year? Now, there's been a lot of talk about Vettel and overtaking abilities and things. I think we've seen that he can do it if he really wants to. Sometimes he can't. But at this circuit, I don't think he would have gone very far at all.
No, there's also some criticism to be made of the damage Vettel made to his car, because we've seen tyres shred themselves in the past and drivers return the car to the pits in one piece and be able to continue.
It was a whole lap, though.
It was a whole lap, but it was an aggressive lap, and he trashed the car and he trashed the hub that the wheel sits on, and he caused an awful lot of damage that perhaps could have been avoided with a slightly more sedate trip back to the paddock. But the guy doesn't need to be in the race. The guy doesn't need to take part in it. What's the point? You know, he's the world champion this year. He's the fastest car on the grid. He got on pole. Why does he want to see if he can come 15th? It's no interest to him at all, is there?
When it comes to rating the race, I know that while we were watching, and towards the end, we were actually discussing what we were going to rate it. So it must have been really interesting if we were already, it hadn't finished yet, and we were already having that conversation.
Be grateful we were still awake.
And you said, oh, I think I'll give it a 3. And I said, wow, that's generous.
Yes.
But actually, I think 3 is about right.
Well, I can't remember what I rated Valencia, but I don't think it was as low as a 3. And arguably, if you compare purely the race, the race in Abu Dhabi to the race in Valencia, Abu Dhabi was more interesting because nothing at all happened in Valencia. So it seems harsh to give it a 3. But the thing you have to keep in mind about Yas Marina is the place is so vast. The infrastructure and the buildings surrounding the track so absolutely massive that they dominate the cars and make the cars look so pathetic and puny and slow. It's like watching a scale X-trick race, or it's like watching Formula One through a tilt shift lens.
I really, really like the facilities. I like everything is so clean and tidy, and I love that blue colour that they've got all around the circuit. But it feels a little bit too clinical.
It is that, but the cars, you can't get close enough to the cars to feel the speed. You could argue that Fernando Alonso going against Lewis Hamilton for the win for the entire race distance should have been, that should be enough to keep us hooked to the Grand Prix. And I'm sure they were going at it lap after lap after lap. I'm sure it was very intense for them, but it was incredibly removed and slow from where we were watching at home on the TV. It just, the cameras, the wide panning shots were so distant from the ferocious action that was going on track. It just felt like they were following each other and not trying. It didn't feel like they were pushing as hard as they could do.
Well, that's not really true, because we saw things like Paul Di Resta and whoever it was he was fighting with, and they would go through the one DRS zone and then swap the position back again in the next DRS zone, and that happened lap after lap. And I just thought, if they're going to do this every lap until the end, I'm actually going to kill myself. And it's like DRS was just completely stupid. Why did they do that? They've got a year's worth of experience in DRS now. They must know what makes things work and what doesn't. And that having two zones in that particular configuration is just going to mean position swapping straight back again. If Fordarresta hadn't made a little mistake, they would have kept doing that until the end of the race for like 40 laps.
They would have, but I can see why it happened, because the DRS regulations were changing throughout the weekend because organisers were paranoid the race would be incredibly dull. So they were piling on more DRS just in case it wasn't enough. And you could feel the fear of organisers that fans weren't going to make it to the end. And you got that sense on Saturday, which is why they were frantically changing these DRS regulations. So they may have masses of data to look back on, but they were just frightened to death that we weren't going to be watching.
I think that overall it was an HRT.
Dreadful.
No, it was an HRT that ruined the race day, because the one highlight was when the one tense moment that was really exciting was when Alonso came into the pit lane and he had the potential to overtake or jump for the lead. I don't suppose we can say overtake, people get upset. It's not overtaking through the pit lane.
You're paranoid now. Listeners have made Christine paranoid. You see what you've done to her?
He had the potential, but then he got caught up behind an HRT and it was just lost completely.
There was a brief moment when the Grand Prix might have been exciting and it was over within a tenth of that second. It never built to anything. It was never too much to see. I do believe that the drivers were trying their hardest, but I don't think it came across on the television. I think the television is just one step removed and it's not good enough. It's not a good viewing experience for fans. I think Nick went to the Grand Prix. He said he loved it and it was his favourite Grand Prix.
He always says that.
Well, yeah, but I think he meant it. I think if you went to the Grand Prix, if you were in Abu Dhabi, I bet it was great to watch. But it does not, for whatever reason, that circuit does not translate to our living room.
Well, interestingly to me, for the previous couple of years, I've just not been interested in Abu Dhabi. It hasn't been very good, whatever, it's rubbish. But this year, I really wanted it to be good. I wanted them to have a good race and for it to be good. So I was sort of rooting for it, which is a new experience for me. So I don't know if that's a positive thing, a step in the right direction.
Horse.
But it didn't work out anyway. So stick a number on it, please.
3. You?
I said 3.
I can't go any higher. Sorry. They should rip it up and start again.
Mr. C, on the debrief, Laffy. You were very mean to Rubens. Very, very, very mean. So mean. I can't even think of an adjective to describe the meanness, and I'm shocked. I'm here to defend Mr. Barrichello, because I don't think it was entirely his fault. Yes, okay, he utilised the Rubens smash, as he does only Rubens can. But it's a sweet smash, kind of, in a sweet kind of 20 years experience kind of way. But I suppose that Maldonado came across him. I'm not putting the entire blame on Rubens. I mean, I know I'm totally not biased, but that was so mean. So, so mean.
So you're a big meanie, basically.
I am. Do you know what's really sad? Is that I quite liked what Rubens did in Abu Dhabi, and considering nobody else really impressed me, he's almost my driver of the day. And now it's going to look like...
You're just saying that.
Now it's going to look like Luki bullied me into saying it. But after saying the guy shouldn't even be in Formula 1, who else did a great job in Abu Dhabi? It's hard to pick a driver of the day, and Rubens did all right.
You are unbelievably fickle.
Yes,
it's ridiculous.
He goes, yeah, zero to hero. That's me, through and through.
So Rubens is your driver of the day.
Well... I can't say who did really well. You can't pick a driver because nobody impressed me. They all just kept going around in circles. You know, some people got to the end and some people didn't. Woohoo!
I was going to go for Alonso because, you know, he was at least fighting for the lead and stuff, but it didn't work out and that was quite disappointing, and that's not his fault, but then I'm not going to give it to him. I decided on Paul de Resta in the end because he had a one-stop strategy when all around him were doing two-stop strategies. Well, there were a couple of other people doing the same as him, but they got caught up in like drive-through penalties and such like.
Okay.
Which leads me on to our undriver of the day.
Oh, I forgot about that. Who is your undriver of the day?
Well, take a wild guess.
Would it be Rubens Barrichello's teammate?
Yeah, Pastor Maldonado was
clueless.
Absolutely rubbish.
Hopeless, a disaster. He shouldn't have a supercar license.
Well,
have I gone too far?
I don't know.
He'll be my driver of the day next week. Just you watch.
It's just that he had the penalty, the drive-through penalty for ignoring blue flags, and then he did exactly the same thing again, and they for whatever reason said they were going to investigate after the race and then didn't penalize or time penalty that made no difference, whatever. They should have black flagged him. If you've been given a penalty, which is a warning.
Yes.
And you're just still doing the same thing.
Yes.
You need to be taken off that circuit.
He very nearly ruined, was it Webber and somebody? There was a fight going on for second and third place, catching up with Maldonado and whoever he was fighting with. The guy blocked the track, got in the way, didn't concede. You're right. They should have parked him. He's a disaster of a driver. He doesn't deserve to be where he is. And with any luck, the PVDSA investigation will see him gone.
Definitely your driver of the day next time, I can tell.
Just you wait.
Time for our rookie racing reports. And we'll start with Paul de Resta in Paul's performance report.
Anonymous.
From one rookie to another, now it is Daniel's day out.
Frustrating.
I think I must have upset Davin a little bit because he really did only put one word in the email this time. Last time
you
out,
will people listen to you. That's the thing. God knows why, but people listen to you. There is one more thing I must mention before we go. It's nothing to do with the race, but it's been bugging me. It's eating away inside my head, and I just have to bring it up. We have to discuss this. Do you remember when we started SciPodcast back in 2007?
Not really.
Oh, you do? There was this McLaren team who had Fernando Alonso and Lewis Hamilton driving for them.
I have vaguely heard of
them. It was a bit
of
a year that year.
Yeah.
One of the most memorable things from that year, and there were many, but one of the things that sticks in my mind is the time when the McLaren team made the drivers change their overalls before going into the press conference. They looked shiny and gleaming.
Yeah, they looked like they had just walked through an ironing board.
Yes, they were. The sponsors were iron flat, so that you couldn't miss the names and the logos on the shirts. And for one race, I think Fernando Alonso donned that shirt and then decided it looked absolutely ridiculous.
Not going
to
do that.
Refused to wear it again, much to the delight, I'm sure, of Ron Dennis. Whereas Lewis Hamilton continued to do as he was told. So you would have a press conference with one guy looking filthy in his grey overalls that should have been reasonably white, but he'd just done a race in them. And then one guy gleaming next to him looked like he'd just stepped out of a showroom. Well, that practice has continued, despite us mocking it incessantly for that year, and despite Fernando Alonso rallying against wearing such a stupid idea. But it's got worse.
Well, I was going to say, I sort of haven't really noticed recently, so I must have got used to it. It wasn't that big a deal. Either they've made it less obvious, or we'd got used to it. But this race, that was completely
different.
Oh, my
goodness me. Following the Grand Prix in Abu Dhabi, Jenson Button walked into the press conference looking like C-3PO.
It was like cardboard. It was like a cardboard costume.
What? I don't know what they were doing. They had cardboard inserts into both arm sections, into the shoulder pads, into the chest.
It was amazing.
I mean, if you're going to make your driver dress up like a robot, pick a cooler robot than C-3PO. Who wants to look like him?
He could have done Transformers or something instead.
Oh my goodness me, it looked so dreadful. And the greatest thing, the thing that made me smile, and still makes me smile, even as I'm thinking about it right now, is there were the two McLaren drivers dressed up like in these ill-fitting suits, which looked like robots, and next to them was none other than Fernando Alonso, who was now wearing red and a more sensible overalls and doesn't drive for a team who makes him dress up like it's Halloween.
If it was me, I would just say, look, let me wear my normal race suit and I will hold up a big sign with all the names you want on it.
Do what they do in NASCAR. Just mention the sponsor names at the end of every sentence. Anything other than what they're doing.
Oh, I don't know. Vodafone McLaren Mercedes is quite annoying.
I don't know. I found it annoying. Maybe we'll get used to it. Maybe in a couple of years' time, it will be normal for drivers to sit there looking that uncomfortable for that period of time. I don't know.
If we got used to them looking like they did before, and then we'll go on and get used to them looking like this, what are they going to come up with next?
How far is Ron going to take it?
They'll come out in a cardboard box.
They'll go, just like a box of washing powder, just two arms sticking out the sides.
Sandwich boards.
Feedback.
First up, we had a message from James, who sent a lovely email. It's a little bit long and a little bit self-congratulatory, but hey, we deserve it, so I'm going to read it anyway. He says, "Hi, Christine and Mr. Z. Well, it is coming to the end of a long season. I've enjoyed listening to every one of the shows for the year, both SBC and the Asides with Joe. I also grab most of the F1 minutes as I don't have enough time to read all I would like to keep up with the news in F1. I stumbled across Felipe Baby a few years ago and since then have become an avid listener. The F1 coverage here in Australia is a little limited and doesn't go into all of the details I want, and having access to SBC lets me hear considered and articulate coverage that I would struggle to do without." Not sure about that. And
it must
fact,
mean Joe.
I did struggle during your downshift last year. Just so that you are aware of how much the show is appreciated by the lurkers out here, I thought I should send you a message to let you know how much I value the time, effort and money that you put into creating the podcast. So now I have. And now I'm going to send you a small donation to help with the cost of running the site. I hope you're able to continue the podcast in some form or other next year. Cheers, James.
What a legend.
He did send us a very little donation, which we appreciate greatly. He also added a little PS that says, I heard DC mention in the Abu Dhabi coverage that the drivers have a little switch that allows them to talk to the pits without anyone else eavesdropping. Is that right? I didn't think that was allowed. If it is allowed, then why don't they use it all the time instead of using those cryptic codes? Except when they want to feed someone a dummy, of course.
I didn't hear that. I didn't know that.
He definitely said it.
Did he? Mm-hmm. He must have more information than we do. That would be a shame if that was the case. I personally would like more radio traffic. I'd like to hear more from the drivers. I think it brings a lot to the coverage. And if teams have found a way around it, that's a shame.
Now a message from Chris, who says, Christine and Mr. C, Williams certainly have been making their headlines recently, and not always for reasons they were hoping for. They've had the worst season in their history this year and their worst qualifying performance this past weekend. On the other hand, they've got Renault engines next year, what appears to be more sponsorship cash. Maybe. Oops. And possibly a 2007 world champion driver. So here's the question. Is Williams F1 on the upswing, or will they fade into F1 history in the next few years? I would argue they're on the upswing, especially if they sign Kimi Raikkonen for next season. On a related note, how bad was Maldonado's race this week? One penalty for ignoring blue flags, and I would argue he should have got a second. Why is Williams looking to replace Barrichello instead of Maldonado? Sure, Pasta is bringing in more sponsorship cash, but not as much as they would get with two veteran drivers scoring points on a regular basis.
It comes back to whether or not you want the money at the start of the season or at the end of the season.
Yes.
Because if you have a pay driver like Maldonado, you get the money up front. And if you have experienced hands on the wheel like Kimi Raikkonen, you'll get the money at the end of the year. And that's the balance that Frank has to make. As to the question of where Williams are going, it's hard for them to get any worse. That's the only thing. That's the only positive about this situation. The only way is up, because if they go any farther down, they will simply disappear. And that would be a massive shame. I don't think Williams are going to disappear. I don't know how much farther forward they might climb. It's nice to that the Renault Williams link is nostalgic and nice, and you can see Renault being interested in pushing Williams as much as Red Bull, if not more than Red Bull, because they could sell a lot of cars with that link. That will help Renault, and they'll be keen to do as much as they can for the team. So that's fantastic. The Cosworth deal that Williams have been using for the past couple of years, it's the worst engine on the grid, and they suffered because of it. So they have to move forward. The only real question is how far from where they currently are.
What they really need to do is do a Honda and become like Braun and leap to the front.
They need a breakthrough. And as you noted earlier, they were one of the teams running the top-mounted exhausts ahead of next year. So they may have some more information. They might be able to do more with the car, because they never got on top of the blown diffuser. They haven't done much with their tiny compact gearbox this year either. They haven't made the most of that. So let's see what they come up with for 2012.
One more bit of feedback to come. We've had excellent feedback again this week, just like last time. If you have anything that you want to share with us, you can email me, christine@sidepodcast.com. You can call the voicemail, 01212887225, or you can send us a message via the contact form, which is at sidepodcast.com/about. This last one comes from Cameron, who says, why is it that Pirelli tyres have made racing more interesting this year? I think it's because teams are making more pit stops. The way that Pirelli have accomplished this is by putting together a bunch of rubbish tyres that degrade really quickly. But a side effect of this has been that high amounts of tyre debris have made it difficult to drive offline. Wouldn't a better solution be for Pirelli to make several sets of good racing tyres that don't spray rubber everywhere, and then mandate a minimum number of pit stops in the race? Some people would say that this is arbitrary, but we already have arbitrary tyre regulations that force teams to use two different sets of tyres during the race, so this would really be no different.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'd also suggest, though, if you maybe allowed cars to refuel mid-race, they might come in when they ran out. That would be another way of doing it, and that would be just as arbitrary and just as much fun. Pirelli, we've given Pirelli a lot of credit for the racing that happened this year, but it's worth remembering that Vettel sewed up the championship very early on because of the way he, and only he, could get the most out of his tyres. So in some ways, Pirelli have conspired to make the tail end of the season incredibly boring, because, you know, if we were still with Bridgestones, it's likely that Vettel wouldn't have had the pace advantage over Mark Webber that he has had, because for whatever reason, he's made the very, very best out of the tyres he's got. So let's not give Pirelli that much credit.
Well, it's also not helped by the fact that they were brand new tyres at the beginning of the year and no one knew what they were doing. And obviously they've had 18 races of experience. And so now they're getting into the fact where they know what they're doing, and it's not so much of a challenge.
Pirelli have a huge challenge on their hands to repeat the feat that they achieved this year. Because, as you said, the teams now know what they're doing, and it's very likely that next year will start off as this one has ended, whereby the teams know how to get the best out of the tyres, and the races won't be as exciting. So therefore, you might want to do exactly as, is it Cameron? Cameron suggested, and mandate a certain number of stops and maybe make a harder tyre because the teams won't destroy them in the way that they did at the start of this year.
Fabulous feedback, as I said. Do keep your thoughts coming, although we only do have one show left this year.
So if you want to get in touch now. If you have some burning question, blooming well, say it. Say it now. Get it off your chest. Tell us, contact us, get in touch, because time is running out. There's only one more race to go, and then we're knocking off for the year.
Housekeeping.
If you have been a regular visitor to sidepodcast.com over the past year, you'll know that there were daily posts that had housed lots of random talk about things sometimes related to F1 and sometimes not, sometimes related to pandas and cake and Doctor Who and space and all kinds of other things. And then we stopped the daily posts, and in their place, a group of commenters have made their own website.
Yay! Yay for proactive commenting. I like this. What's it called?
It's called I Miss the Comments.
That's less proactive. That's slightly retro and a bit negative.
Yeah, but it's at imissthecomments.wordpress.com. And I think at the moment it's a work in progress. But really, the general vibe seems to be anything goes. We'll talk about anything. It's all very random, very open, easy. And if you are missing the daily post, then pop along over there, imissthecomments.wordpress.com.
Say hi.
Say hello. So as we mentioned, the last race of the year is coming up. And after that will be our last show of the year. Because we're taking December off.
We made it to the end.
Well, almost. We will have.
We will have made it to the end.
Don't celebrate now. Celebrate in the next show.
I went too soon. I think I feel a song coming on. How about you?
I think so.
Mad for F1. He made this tune. We demand more songs for next week. If you're in any way creative, if you're in any way inspired to make some side podcast music, do so. Get in touch. And we'll try and play it on the last show of the year.
They know their stuff. Every Formula One fan in the world must listen to Side Podcast with Mr. C and Christine. They're fabulous. Every Formula One fan in the world must listen to Side Podcast with Mr. C and Christine. They're fabulous.